course, now I'm an alcoholic.
Of course.
And I got plugged to introduce my friend, Chuck. You know, about a year ago when I first came to the Yet Group, you know, I met Chuck, and we seemed to have clicked right off because we kind of understood each other, you know, in a probably strange kind of way. But it's worked, you know. It's worked. You know, he and I have a pretty decent relationship today, and, you know, I try to stay in touch with Chuck as much as possible. I'm sure that what Chuck will tell you tonight will interest you as well as intrigue you. I've heard Chuck's story. When I carried Chuck down to DC-4 one Sunday, he went down and shared with those guys down there, and it was real interesting, to say the least. To have gone through the things that he's gone through and to arrive at the place he's arrived at, and to be as sound of mind as he is today, and some folks will probably question his soundness of mind, but that's for you to judge, and that's it. Chuck is a real good guy, and I love him, you know, and he's one of the people I've resonated to since I've been out of prison. So at this time, I'm not taking up any more Chuck's time. I'm bringing y'all Chuck.
My name's Chuck. I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Chuck.
Someone tells me I got to be loud and noisy. I can be loud and noisy. What happened, what it's like, and what it's like now. I got drunk. I fell down a lot. I went to jail. I wound up in the psych ward and sleeping in an alley soon thereafter, and I got sober, and I have been sober. Thank you very much. I actually pulled that on somebody one time. We were speaking at a rather large gathering, and he didn't want to speak after me because he thought he couldn't match my speaking pace. And so he was all worried about it, and as a direct result of his worrying, he got to fill an hour and a half space because that was my story, and I sat down, and he was just standing there with his jaw hanging open. My sponsor told me later on that wasn't a very nice thing to do. It seemed like a good joke to me. Most of my ideas are sort of like that. They seem like a good idea at the time, and usually someone walks up to me later on and says, "Yo, dude, you might owe that dude an apology." I stumble like that through sobriety. I come. Yes, she's going to talk to us all during the meeting. I come from a family of alcoholics. A rather large family of alcoholics. It's a generational thing. It goes back, if not decades, centuries, to my knowledge anyway. My granddaddy had a still out in his front yard the day he died, he made no bones about it. He didn't hide it anywhere. It was just right out there 15 foot from his front porch, so he didn't have to go too far when the weather was bad. And stuff happened in the house where I grew up. You learned early what secrets were, because you weren't allowed to talk about certain things outside the house. There's a lot of alcoholics that come from broken homes and from abusive situations. I got to tell you straight up, that didn't make me an alcoholic. I blamed it for a long time, but that didn't make me an alcoholic. You know, at 13 years old, I left home. I gave my dad a little love note written on the end of a Louisville Slugger. And he told my mama he gonna kill me when he got out the hospital, so I stole his .38 pistol and I left home. And I left an address with my mama. I said, "Give that to Daddy and tell him where to come get me. I'll be holding this pistol for him." He never came for that pistol. I carried that pistol until I was 18 years old, and the Harris County Police Department couldn't figure out what the hell an 18-year-old kid was doing with a .38 snub that was registered to a guy that was in his 40s at the time, and so they kept it. You know, they decided I didn't need it. Someone of my temperament probably did not need a pistol of that sort. Well, I went out and replaced it soon thereafter. I started drinking seriously when I was 8. I say seriously because, you know, up until that time, Dad and them would have a party out in the backyard, and they'd get the kids falling down drunk. It was just entertainment, you know, and At 8, I made the conscious decision I would start stealing his whiskey. A lot of things happened at 8 years old. I started stealing his whiskey. At first, I put food coloring in the bottle so he couldn't tell, and I quickly realized that the old man never knew how much damn whiskey he ever had at any given time anyway, so I quit fooling with it. I started smoking cigarettes. We moved from Georgia to New York soon thereafter. And at the age of 9, I tried my first suicide attempt. I hung myself in the basement, and if my brother hadn't come home from leave from the Army, it would have been a successful attempt. I wore turtlenecks for a little while thereafter because it was a very close attempt, and it left a noticeable mark around my neck. So in the middle of July, I was wearing turtlenecks. To this day, I don't like wearing turtlenecks. But that was one more thing, you see, that was required that I lie about. I learned to lie from some of the best teachers on earth. You know, and so when I hit the road at 13, I was already one step up on most people around me. Because I could tell you stuff and make you believe it. Because I could tell me stuff and make me believe it. See, that's the sign of a really successful liar. If you're sitting in here and you're nodding your head, hi, you're lying, some bitch. You know, there's no getting around it. Leaving out of the house at 13, I was required to do certain things to provide for myself. I could break into your house in a hot minute. I was one of the best second story guys that was running for a little while. I got arrested in Hell's Kitchen. I think I was 16 going on 17, and the crime rate in my neighborhood dropped 35%. Oh. I was asked to leave Hell's Kitchen. Now, in the 70s, Hell's Kitchen was Hell's Kitchen. They called it that because it wasn't a very nice place to visit. And my cousin was most impressed when a judge threw me out of Hell's Kitchen. He had never met anyone that had been banned from Hell's Kitchen before. I'm proficient at what I do. I started picking up and moving quick. I learned early in life that, you know, they paid them policemen to catch me. I want to keep them gainfully employed. So I moved fast and I moved hard. And I left warrants behind me everywhere I went. I'm the bull in the china shop. They refer to me in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I roar through everybody's life. And I don't leave good, warm feelings behind me. I'm a good alcoholic. I will rob from you and then come back to your house and help you look for what you just lost. So I can come back and rob you again later on. It wasn't, you know, I had me a lot of fun out there. But starting drinking at such an early age led to some things. I've got my seventh grade school picture at home where I was doing acid. My eyes are blown. And Mom thought it was something wrong with the lighting, you know, for years. And when I got sober, I told her what was up with that picture. And she hid it in her bedroom. I used to do stuff like, there was a cop that was always jacking with us. So me and a buddy of mine got together and we decided we was going to jack with him. He drove a 66 Volkswagen. He was proud of that car. So we'd get a good buzz on. We'd go over, pick his car up and carry it around the block. You know. We'd fill his tank, and then we'd empty his tank, and then we'd fill his tank. I made amends to that man. He said he thought he was losing his damn mind. He couldn't figure out how his car was getting moved. We were physically picking it up and carrying it around. We did that for a half a year before I stole it and took back off to New York with it. He got that car back, second in reverse worked. Nothing else. The radio was gone. It was a mess. That's one of them warrants I left behind me. I got arrested several times in Harris County. And had a judge look at me one time and said, if we see you one more time up here, you'll do 3 years. There won't be no hello, there won't be no goodbye, you'll do 3 years, and we'll discuss it after you're finished. A smart man would have said, well, okay, I'm going to stop now. I done made somebody irritated. Well, a really smart man would have never been there repeatedly anyway, but a smart man would have said, I'm going to stop now. I thought, I wonder what jail is going to be like for 3 years. Because I couldn't stop. By the time I was 16, when I was 16, I actually tried to quit drinking. And I could not. I gave it everything I had, too. I could not. So at the ripe old age of 16, I figured, to hell with it, we're going to the wall. You know, not that I wasn't already going to the wall all the time. I got to tell you, I'm a blackout drinker. There's huge sections of my life that I do not remember. Every now and again, something will pop in my brain, and it's one of them old memories coming up. Or someone will come across me. I had a guy follow me around a grocery store in Los Angeles. He followed me from one end of the store to the other before I finally got irritated enough to turn around and say, can I help you? He said, you don't know me. Usually, before I got sober, alarm bells would have sounded about then, and I would have been taking appropriate measures to make sure I didn't know him ever again. But he kind of sandbagged me. He said, I do not know you. Where did I meet you? He said, if I shot someone in Atlanta, Georgia, I would remember their face in Los Angeles, California. Okay, I don't remember being to Atlanta, Georgia, much less shooting you. He said, I assure you, you shot me in Atlanta, Georgia. I freaked out a little bit. You know, my habit went straight for the back. There's nothing back there no more. Not even an ass. There's nothing back there. There's no weapons. So now what you do? He said, and I quote, I have found the Lord, and I just wanted to tell you I forgive you for shooting me. The spiritual giant I am immediately quipped back to him, well, that's mighty nice of you. I forgive you for whatever it was I did that I or you did that I shot you for. Spiritual giant in action. And then went out in the parking lot because I'm freaking out now. I left my grocery cart sitting there and went out in the parking lot and called my sponsor immediately. Something I learned to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, because my head is saying, okay, the words are coming out of his mouth, but I don't believe them. There's about to be something bad happening here. My head goes places. And in those situations, it goes places in hyperdrive. And they're never very good places. I called my sponsor up, explained the situation to him. He said, well, that's nice. You owe him another amends. I said, what do I owe him an amends for? He said, that smart-ass remark you made to him, you owe him an amends for that. You need to go find him. So I went back in the store and found this individual and apologized in a sincere manner for my irresponsible reaction. And I explained to him that he made me extremely nervous, and I'd try not to act like that around him ever again. I also explained to him, I'm now sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I truly need to make an amends to you. I have wronged you. What do I owe you for what I have done? Because he incurred medical bills. I took the boy's spleen out. He's got some problems going on. He's taking lifetime medication for that. He said, you can stay sober is the only way you can make amends to me and continue your search for God. And then I had to listen to the man preach at me for 45 minutes about the second coming of Jesus, which I do not mind. It's a small price to pay for shooting a man in Houston, Texas. I have paid heavier consequences for my actions. I bring that story up to show that this thing is an ongoing process. Step one in my life was a major beginning. I met my first sponsor, Drew Straws. The old timers got together in the room. Nobody would sponsor me. I was psychotic when I first came into these rooms. I was living in an alley. I had my special pets, you know, my lice and my cockroaches. They lived in my beard and my hair. Kid you not. I smelled like something that the trash man wouldn't throw away. And that's, by the way, where I got most of my meals from, was out of trash cans. I was one of them homeless people you see stumbling out here on the street. And I was one of them, let's say, more aggressive homeless people you see stumbling out. People cross the street. They didn't deal with me very well. I was standing outside Crest House panhandling change, and a guy went walking by me, and he stopped me, looked at me, and he said, "Aren't you Donna's kid?" That was my introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. That was my Uncle Stephen. He'd been sober for 15 years at the time, I think it was, 16 years, something like that. And he 12-stepped me into the programs of Alcoholics Anonymous. I came into the room. I was terrified to be here. And I hid that through massive amounts. It wasn't even anger. It was rage. If you looked at me, you and I had a problem. I come walking up the steps of the West Side Lionel Club in West Los Angeles, California. Little old short dude named Roy Brown come running up to me and said, "Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous." He grabs me and he hugs me. Where I come from, men don't hug men. I threw him down the stairs. I didn't understand what he was doing. There's a gentleman coming back up the stairs. His name was Fred. He caught Roy halfway down the stairs, set him on his feet, and said, "I wouldn't do that again if I was you." My welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Roy came right up the stairs and got me a cup of coffee. And as I shook more than half of it out, he went and got me another cup of coffee, only halfway full. I'm starting to think this dude wants something from me, and I'm getting awful suspicious of him, and I'm thinking about very seriously hurting him because he kept bringing me coffee. I did not understand this, and his sponsor finally grabbed a hold of him when I started throwing ashtrays at him every time he looked in my direction, because they had ashtrays on the table back in them days, and grabbed a hold of his arm and said, "You might want to quit antagonizing the newcomer." He said, "I'm trying to be of service." "He's not taking it that way, Roy. You might want to come sit over in this corner. That guy ain't got a good look in his eye, and he's looking at you." I didn't have a good look in my eye for a long time before I met Roy. My family no longer had anything to do with me. My mom ran me off after I got in a shootout in her living room. I couldn't understand that. The dude pulled his pistol first. I just acted in that. I came close to killing my little brother. I discharged my firearm, missing my target because he was moving a hell of a lot faster than I was tracking. And it went through my little brother's bedroom wall and into his mattress while he was in there asleep, about 4 inches below his pillow. I couldn't understand why my mom threw me out the house. She said, "Don't you come back." See, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and I heard something wonderful. Y'all said, "Keep coming back." I hadn't heard "keep coming back" in forever and a day. What I heard always was, "Go the hell away." The only people who said "keep coming back" was the police. And they would have told me to go to hell away if I'd quit doing what I was doing. I got a bad problem. I drink, your car starts to talk to me. And other states start to look really nice. So I wake up in other states in your car. With my car parked at home or somewhere, I have actually parked cars and lost them forever. Never did find them. But I had somebody else's car, so it wasn't that big a deal. Yeah. My first sponsor, Drew, the old timers, like I said, Drew Straws. He introduced himself to me. He said, "My name is Al. I'm your sponsor." I thought, sponsors. You know, professional sportsmen, they have sponsors. They give them money. So I thought, "Can I get $10? He said, "Hell no." I'm not that kind of sponsor. He said, let's get one thing straight. I'm not your banker. I'm not your cab. I'm not your romantic advisor. I am your guide through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. My responsibility begins and ends there. Your responsibility is to decide today whether you wish to stay sober or not, and how far are you willing to go to do so. Your immediate answer is not required. Your misery is waiting for you at the bottom of the steps. You have a choice to make. Call me tomorrow. I'm like, dude, I'm homeless. I'm sleeping in an alley right out here behind the West Side Lano Club. How am I supposed to call you? They didn't have cell phones back then, and if they had, I'd have a hot mind to get something to make my world right. Because I'm a good alcoholic. I've done messed myself up so bad, I need something 24/7 to keep me right. And it don't matter what it is. It run the gamut from Jack Daniel's Old Number 7 to black tar heroin. It did not matter what it is. I got to shut them voices down. Al said, here's how I did step one. I'll meet you here tomorrow. I'll be here tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Don't be late. He said, I'm not talking about 8:55. I'm not going to be here at 8:55. He said, I'm not talking about 9:05. I'm not going to be here at 9:05. I will be here at 9 sharp. Show me how willing you are. Well, hell, I lived on a bench behind the back of the place. And when the guy came to open the door, I was standing by the door to wait for him to get there because I was not sleeping. Meeting him there at 9 was no big deal. Because when they unlocked the joint at 7 in the morning, I was there. When they threw everybody out and locked the joint up at 10 at night, I was there. Because I didn't have anything else going on, and nobody in his right mind was going to hire me to even sweep their damn sidewalk. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're new in this program, take a look around. You'll see some of the warmest people you'll ever meet. But you got to meet them. They ain't a whole bunch of people going to knock themselves over and come over to get to you to say hi. Especially if you're acting like I was acting. I spent days in Alcoholics Anonymous hungry because I was too proud to ask and too proud to mention it. And I could no longer eat like I had been eating. See, I ran into a hell of a conundrum. I got in here and they say, get sober and your life will start getting better. What they failed to mention is it ain't going to start immediately. Some things are going to come back to you immediately. The old timers where I got sober at used to say, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, congratulations, you got your feelings back. I'm so sorry you got your feelings back. Now get the F over yourself and get on with it. Step one was just to sit down and find my powerlessness. Find my unmanageability. Me living in an alley, eating out of garbage can, coming in here with shit-stained, piss-stained clothing, I didn't consider that powerless, and I didn't consider that unmanageable. I used to live in that alley and look down on the world that was going to work. See, I'm delusional when I'm doing what I do best. Because as I mentioned before, I am the best at lying to me. And by the way, the longer I drank, the more drugs I did, the more my morals started slipping. I used to say, oh, I'll never be like this. Well, okay, this was a little too high. I'll never be like this. Oh, you'll never catch me. You know, all that shit just went by the wayside that quick. So I understood when my first sponsor started saying this, get in the middle of that and you'll be okay. I understood that deep down in my soul. The first time I heard him do that, he clapped them hands and my mind said, mm-hmm, I know that. I can't get past the sound of that hand clap, though, because then I start living in tomorrow. or I start recycling yesterday. And neither one of them's really good. There's an old timer that used to come in the room. He said, "We've got 1 foot in tomorrow and 1 foot in yesterday. You're pissing all over today. And you ain't got an umbrella." So through the process of finding my powerlessness and my unmanageability, I had an old shit moment. Because if you've truly done a step one, you will definitely be left standing there saying, "Oh hell, what you done got yourself into now?" But see, I didn't go straight into step two and say, "Oh good, I'm at step two." I went into step two and I looked around and y'all are talking about finding a power greater than myself. I lived for years with no power greater than myself. If I couldn't put my hand on it, pull a trigger on it, pop a knife on you, pick up a bat, a rock, or something, there was no power greater than myself. I had a struggle with that. I grew up and half my family was strict Southern Baptist. And I do mean fundamentalist Southern Baptist in all its glory. Make Jerry Falwell look like a hellraiser in a rebellion. And the other half was Jehovah's Witness. By the time I was 4 years old, I figured out I didn't want nothing. Nothing to do with the God like that. I was done anyway. There was nothing I could do to find that grace that they mentioned every now and again. There was nothing I could do to find that. Because I heard a whole boatload about how I done lost it. And then some of my experiences out there taught me in no uncertain terms there wasn't a God I could trust nor a man. I remember at 10 years old looking at my dad saying, "Neither you nor any son of a bitch walking the face of this earth will ever make me cry again. You'll wear your arms out, but you ain't going to do it, old man." And he gave it his shot. But see, I'm kind of stubborn. And when I told him that, there's something inside me died the day I told him that. And he spent a few years trying, right up until I turned 13 and I brought Jesus home to him. I come by mine honestly. Presented a problem with step two. But it wasn't an insurmountable problem. Al was quite honestly the smartest man I ever met. He told me, "Find something. It don't matter. Find something." So I started praying to a tree. And he didn't laugh at me about praying to a tree. He didn't say, "You're doing this wrong." Al didn't say a lot of stuff. I hear people say in Alcoholics Anonymous. Al told me, he said, "You'll know when you're doing this program wrong when you wake up with a fucking drink in your hand." Pardon my French. That's how he put it. He said, "That's how you'll know you're doing this wrong. Other than that, don't listen to the idiots. Because everybody's got free advice and it's worth every damn penny you pay for it." He also used to tell me, "You want to get to be an old timer, don't drink, don't use. Don't die. And you will be an old timer." Now, would you like to get to be a comfortable old timer is the key to the question. Trust me, I've seen some of them that don't do what we do. My second sponsor put a pistol in his mouth and pulled the trigger because he quit doing what we do. 26 years sober. He graduated. Here's your sign. It's a sign for me anyway. Because I'd been questioning for a couple years whether he still needed to be my sponsor. But I kept going through the motion. Because something else I learned in here from the old timers is you don't go sponsor shopping. If you've got a sponsor, you pick the sponsor for a reason. God had you pick that sponsor for a reason. He may not be saving your life. You may be saving his. You don't go sponsor shopping. For a long time after everybody else had walked away from Ronnie, I called the man every day. I met him when he came to meetings, and I watched him change, and he was saving my life. My first sponsor used to say, "Look around this room. There are no bad people in here. There are good examples, and there are examples of what you don't want to be. It's up to you to find them." And that's so true. So I struggled past the God concept of the second step, and I had to deal with the unmanageable, because I didn't think my life was unmanageable. I was insane. I was having trouble grasping that. I was insane. Took a while. And then I got into step three. I love step three. We sat down, we read about it, we got down on our knees and we read the prayer and got up. No, that's all. He said, no, we got some more reading to do. And directly below step three, it says, think carefully before committing this. After the prayer, I love that. Only an alcoholic would put that. You're supposed to put the warnings at the front end, damn it. No, they got it tucked into the backside of it. Hey, this don't make no damn sense to me. My sponsor's laughing. He's like, well, you read this page 40 times. I said, I never saw that. It's amazing. There's still stuff in that book I've never seen. And I've been reading it for a while. Not as diligently as I should be, but I've been reading it for a while. And I still come across a whole bunch of stuff in that book I've never seen. I sponsored this cat. He could quote that book to me, chapter and verse. Tell me where every comma, every period, every quotation mark was in it. Tell me where all the italicized words, what page, what part of the page, what, how many sentences into it, how many words were in the italicized section. Could not stay sober. You can teach a damn parrot this program. Actually knew a guy had a parrot that would say, keep coming back, it works. We are some sick people. My first sponsor used to tell me all the time, you take yourself too damn seriously and you better get over that quick or you're going to die. No matter how smart you think you are, you're here. He used to tell me all the time, for someone who's so goddamn smart, you wind up talking to someone like me. I can't figure that out. Couldn't figure out what he was trying to say. Took some time to figure that one out. Time is something you only get a minute at a time. I'm the immediate gratification required kind of alcoholic. I don't want to take the time. I want to know it 5 minutes before I think to ask it. Because I don't like asking questions I don't know the answer to already. Caused me a lot of heartache in here. Got into the fourth step. You want me to write what? See, y'all call that an inventory here. I call that a written confession where I got out of the streets I come from. You want me to write down what? You are out of your damn mind. My sponsor just nodded his head and walked away. He used to tell me all the time, I am so grateful for the people who allowed me my pain. Don't expect me to tell you it's going to be okay. I'm going to allow you your pain. And it's not going to be okay until you do something differently. And then maybe, just maybe, it'll be okay. Nowhere in that big book does it say it's going to be okay. It said not one amongst us, like the self-seeking and the self-searching required for the successful consummation of this program. Not one. It didn't say some of us. It didn't say a lucky few. It said not one. That's not good tidings for someone like me. But here's the kicker. The old timers used to say, you do what we do, you'll get what we got. You refuse to do what we do, and you can keep what you got. Because ain't nobody here to hijack you, force you, to brainwash you. God knows if your mind is anything like mine, it could use a good scrubbing, but we ain't here for that. Finally did the fourth step. And did the fifth step with the same kind of argument. You want me to sit down and talk to who about what? Promptly after the fifth step, I determined I need to kill my sponsor. Serious heart attack. Because I'm now scared. He knows more about me than my own mama does. Because I have told that man something that was forbidden to tell anyone. The truth. the whole truth as I knew it at that moment, and nothing but Chuck. And it scared the living hell out of me. I'm kind of glad I didn't follow through with that plan, because I got to argue with him about a few more steps. You know? 6 and 7, paragraph and a half in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you question that, go look it up. My first sponsor used to throw stuff out of the Big Book, and I'd tell him, I said, you're not putting any references to it. He says, well, my idea is to put the information out there and then make you go verify it. So go get busy. Because I would. I'd hear him speak, and he'd throw some stuff out there, and I'd go looking in the book for that. Because I'm wanting to catch this man in a lie. He said, he used to say jokingly, he said, you know, the funniest joke ever told in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous was written by William Silkworth. You can absolutely believe anything these men have to say about themselves. I've seen people speaking from the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous fall off it drunk. I watched a guy get up there one time, and he's taking his 10-year cake, and he actually crashed his car in the parking lot, and the cops hauled him away for DUI. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the greatest show on earth. If you learn to laugh at yourself and get a little light about yourself, it won't be hard to struggle. Now that learning to laugh and learning to get a little light about yourself, that's going to be the hard struggle. Because I'm a very serious individual when I come up out of that alley. I'm very serious about me and very serious about you, and I don't trust nobody and I don't trust nothing, and you people are telling me I got to trust these guys and I got to get together with this. I got to find a God I can trust. What do you mean I got to find these people I can trust? I don't trust nothing. You could tell me the print on that page was black and I had to go verify it. Which is a good thing, because that's what the steps are all about. Verification. First of all, it verifies who I really am. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about the fourth step. It says we got to get down to the causes and the conditions, that which drove us to behave like we behaved. That's not an easy process, folks. Come up on step 8. All you're doing is making a list. I made just as big a deal out of it as I hear newcomers make today. All you're doing is making a list. And by the way, if you've done a thorough four step, you've already got most of that list. I first got sober, people were running around burning their fifth steps, you know, releasing it to God. I thought that was just the most phenomenal damn thing I ever heard. My sponsor said, that's not you. You'll hold on to that book. I'm very paranoid about this four step, by the way, because in my mind, it is a written confession. It's got my name on the book, and it's in my handwriting. And there's some stuff in there that, well, you know, they wanted to talk to me about in 7 states that I can remember. Did that 9th step thing. That was I won't do it. That was one of my I won't do it moments. My sponsor, God bless him, my sponsor, he just shook his head and walked away. I'm so grateful to the people who allowed me my pain. They didn't try to drive it into my head I was doing wrong. They didn't try to drive it into my head that I was screwing up. I spent all my life hearing people tell me what I was screwing up and what I was doing wrong. I came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and God saw fit to give me a sponsor that showed me. He didn't tell me. He showed me the way this thing worked. On a daily basis. He worked with someone he couldn't trust to take to his house for almost 2 years. I was 2.5 years sober before he took me by his damn house. And he did that because we were going to a convention in San Diego and he forgot his stuff. And by the way, in that convention in San Diego, I got mad at somebody and pulled a pistol out on him. So he didn't even get to catch the convention because they grabbed a hold of me and hustled me the hell out there. He didn't tell me what I was doing. I grew up hearing all that stuff. He showed me in a loving and kind way with his biting sarcasm. I couldn't stand the old bastard for quite a long time. I cried like a baby the day he died. He died of ALS. So I understand that ice bucket challenge. Did step nine. He told me, he asked me, who's the most the person you owe the most amends to? I said, my mom. He said, no, it's not. I said, well, you just asked me the damn question. If you're already going to give me the answer, why do you even bother asking? He said, I wanted to see what your reaction would be. You want to take the easier, softer way. I'm telling you, it ain't your mom, it's your dad. So your first amend will be to your dad. I'll be damned. I ain't talked to this man in years. I'll be damned. Last time I talked to my dad, we got in a shootout. We tried to kill each other. I blew up his car, burned down his house, set his favorite bar on fire because it was his favorite bar, and I just wanted to make sure he didn't have a comfortable place to go. He just kind of shook his head and walked away. When the pain got to be enough, I started trying to reach out to my dad. It took a while to find him. Finally, someone in the family tracked him down and got me a phone number, and I called him up. And my amends was to start like this. I was not to mention anything at all about what my dad had done to me. It was not to be part of the conversation in any way, shape, manner, or form unless he forced the item. Dad, I have done you wrong. I need to make amends. Could you please tell me what I need to do to set this wrong right? And then shut the hell up. That was my instructions. We went through all this, and this, you know, Dad started arguing with me about how I hadn't done him wrong, and I brought out some of the stuff I'd done to him. I knew I blew up a 1974 Grand Torino. It was a gorgeous car. I'm surprised I didn't steal it before I blew it up, but I did, and I just blew it up in his driveway. He said, and I quote, "Oh boy, shit like that happens in every family." I've got two kids in here tonight, and if one of them ever says they blew my car up, I'm going to tell you that ain't going to be my reaction. That tells you where I come from. Because he was serious. He said, you don't owe me any money. I went back, told my sponsor, off the hook, got it. He said, no, you're not. You owe a financial amends to that man, whether he wishes to accept it or not. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to find the local shelter for battered and abused women and children, and we're going to make a donation in his name, and we're using his Social Security number to that shelter. My dad went crazy for a couple years after that because I did that for a long time. I'd say more like 5 years after that. He'd get tax papers from Los Angeles County, shelter for battered and abused women and children. He'd get these tax papers in the mail for his tax deductions. And he's a blackout drinker too. And he don't remember making these. And we ain't talking about small amounts of money. We're talking about thousands of dollars by the time it's all said and done. He was going nuts. He's like, damn, I don't even know anybody in Los Angeles other than you, boy. What the hell is going on here? And I wasn't allowed to tell him what I was doing. That was part of the amends. So I got to watch my dad run a little crazy. It's kind of humorous. You know, second thing he told me, he said, you're going to turn yourself in. You got these warrants hanging out on you. You cannot be comfortable in sobriety if every time you see a cop, you want to duck around the corner of the building and hide. I'll be damned. I ain't going to do it. That same sad dog-eyed look and that head shaking, he turned around and walked away. After I got out of L.A. County Jail 6 months later, I was able to walk around and not have to worry about that cop coming down the street. I can't speak for nobody here. I used to be able to track a cop 4 blocks either way. I catch him 4 blocks out of that corner of this eye and watch him go 4 blocks out the corner of that eye and never turn my damn head because he might catch me looking at him. Didn't have to live like that. Two amends brought about such immediate relief. I got to tell you, when I hung up from my dad, a lot of the rage I used to carry, I didn't carry anger, I carried rage. A lot of the rage I used to carry, I hung up with my dad, and that seemed to be gone. It took me a couple days to put my finger on it. I couldn't figure out what the hell it was. Before you're halfway through, it says. Hell, I'm two in and I'm already seeing the rewards. You know, that first day of total serenity, I was so confused by what that was, I had to go start a fight with somebody. It was so uncomfortable. My sponsor thought that was just hilarious. We got he asked me what that fight was about, and I do mean a fight. I don't mean we just argued. I walked up and punched a dude in the snot locker. He didn't like that. He punched me back, and we went to it. Let's get down. My sponsor asked me what that was all about, and I got to describing that weird, real weird feeling and how I didn't like that guy anyway, so that seemed like the appropriate thing to do. And by the God, after that fight was over with, that real weird feeling was gone. For days, it was gone. Hell, for months. My sponsor laughed. He said, "You just described serenity to me. I'm delusional." 10, 11, 12, they call them the maintenance step. They're an ongoing thing. Step 10 is a daily four step. You can ask my missus, I don't do that every day, do I, baby? Not by a long shot. I do the best I can. I've got friends came over tonight just to hear me speak. I got people in my life today that love me, that actually like hearing from me. If you're new in this program and you're saying none of this makes any damn sense to me, that's all right. Just keep coming back. I've been to meetings where they don't like drunk people to come in there, and I quite honestly, I'm of the firm belief if you don't allow a drunk person in your meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, you forgot where the hell you came from, and you need to go play with the fire some more. I have gotten in somebody's face that was trying to run a drunk out of a meeting, and that drunk guy actually looked at me, started crying, and said, "Nobody's taken up for me in a long time." It's like, sit your drunk ass down, shut up. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. We're a group of people that would not ordinarily mix. I can assure you 95% of you people in here would have met me out there and you'd have run like hell the other way. And the other 5% of you would have hung around just because, like, hanging around with me was better than watching cable TV. Or at least that's what my first sponsor used to say. We practice these principles. For the most part, you'll find people in here that'll love you until you learn to love yourself. That's what you people did with me. You didn't run me off when I was sitting in the back of the room with that come jack with me looking and just, come on, I want some of you, come on, waiting for the first taker. Y'all didn't run me off. There's a couple times I got unruly and four or five of you got up and escorted me the hell out and told me to come back tomorrow. When I say escorted, there's a couple times they actually bodily picked me up and threw me out the damn door because, you know, I'm Billy Badass and there ain't nobody in here big enough to throw me out the door. They proved me wrong. But they even did that in a loving manner as they possibly could. They didn't follow me out the door and stomp me into a mud puddle. They actually threw me out the door and told me to come back tomorrow. We're going to make mistakes. I've watched people come in here and just look for the mistakes. The old timers where I got sober said, get in the middle and look for the solution. Look for the things you can identify with, because that's what's going to save your ass. You can find mistakes anywhere. That's what's going to kill you. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're new in here, welcome. If you're getting ready to be new in here again, you don't have to do that. Relapse is not a requirement. I think in today's Alcoholics Anonymous, too many people lose focus of that. That's one thing they used to say to me all the time, you ain't got to do this ever again unless you want to. My first sponsor used to say, you've now heard the bell ring and you cannot unring the bell. The bell is you're an alcoholic. You do not have to drink if you do not want to. Second part of that bell ringing is if you want to, if you've heard the bell ring, we just fucked up your drinking. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you for listening to me.
Chuck, would you do the honors?
Let this circle represent what we can do together, what we could not do alone. Who's in the middle?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Keep coming back. It works if you work it.